Good afternoon. I will call to order this remote meeting of the House Commerce Committee and ask Mr. Brown to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Katfizo-Watun.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson here.
Representative Dabney, excused. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Haley.
Here.
Representative Cagle.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Lilly. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, present.
Representative Lucero.
Yes, sir.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Tice.
Here. Glad to see that Lislegard's here after his wonderful tax committee.
And Representative Lilly, who I think just joined us.
Lilly, present.
Thank you.
We have a quorum. Our first item of business is approval of our minutes from yesterday's meeting. Representative Katfizo-Watun, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I would, yes, Mr. Chair. I would move the minutes from March 23rd.
Any discussion to the Katfizo-Watun motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
The motion prevails in the minutes from March 23rd, 2021 are approved. Our first item today is House File 2364 from Vice Chair Katfizo-Watun. Vice Chair Katfizo-Watun, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move that House File 2364 be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill.
Okay, Vice Chair moves her bill before the committee, and Vice Chair Katfizo-Watun to your bill.
Good, thank you. So members, House File 2364 came to me from a constituent who is actually here with us to testify today, but it's a really simple bill. Basically, the bill itself just requires that residential internet service contracts be prorated from the start and end date of the service. And it goes into effect later on this year, August 1st, and it will apply to contracts executed or renewed on or after August 1st. So at this point, Mr. Chair, I would like to invite my constituent to share his story, and then I'll stand for questions.
Okay, and your constituent is Andrew Arndt. Mr. Arndt? We are not hearing you, Mr. Arndt. I see you're not muted, but I don't know if you're having a microphone issue.
Mr. Chair, I was having the same issue. You might need to go into the microphone settings and make sure it's using your headset as the audio.
We are still not hearing you, Mr. Arndt. I think what we will do is perhaps we have one public testifier, so we will turn to that first, and then we'll give you a chance to try and see if you can get your audio going. And hopefully we can come back to you after our public testifier. So the public testifier is Dana Bailey from Lumen. Ms. Bailey.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of the committee today. My name is Dana Bailey, and I'm the Government Affairs and Public Policy Director for Lumen in Minnesota. I'm here to testify in opposition to Representative Katfizo-Watun's bill. Lumen began monthly billing practices in 2019, and at the time, customers were notified of this change, and since, any customers who sign up for our residential internet service are advised before purchase and at point of sale. This streamlined billing allows for a straightforward service where the term is 1 month. We've also moved away from long-term contracts and eliminated early termination fees. Month-to-month billing is not an uncommon practice in our broadband ecosystem. Our customers have access to our service for the full month, which benefits them if they transfer to another provider, but the new provider is unable to connect service or meet the installation date. Had we turned off their service by that expected install date, we would not be able to accommodate any gap in service that customer might have experienced. Encouraging broadband deployment means allowing businesses the flexibility to devise pricing that best meets their needs and is attractive to their customers. Lumen is hopeful for much more discussion with the author, the vice chair, and the chair before the bill proceeds any further. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd be glad to stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. We will now try and see if Mr. Arndt has got his audio going. Mr. Arndt? Still nothing. One thing you might try, Mr. Arndt, if you switch your audio to your phone, you have an option of dialing in. If you go down to the audio and if you dial in, sometimes when my microphone doesn't work, that's the way that I'm able to do that. So you just have to try that one. While we are waiting for Mr. Arndt, I do see that Representative Lucero maybe wanted to speak to the bill. So Representative Lucero, if you had a comment, maybe now would be a good time before we return to Mr. Arndt.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have actually several questions. And the first question is, I do see in the bill, and this should be for the bill author, I do see that it's coding a new chapter. So is there a definition of residential internet service?
I will first turn to Representative Katisa Watum, but also see that might be a question for our legal counsel, Ms. Pompu. So let's first go to Representative Katisa Watum, but you can feel free to punt to Ms.
Thank
Pompu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. And thank you for the question, Representative Lucero. As you can see in the bill text right now, we don't have an included definition, but I will ask Ms. Pompu to extrapolate.
And I know, Ms. Pompu, if you have an answer, I know that Mr. Bob Eliff handles telecommunications, so I don't know if this is a question for you or, and I don't see Mr. Eliff is on the call, so.
He does, and he consulted with me on it, but since we put it in the Consumer Protection Statute, sorry, Chair and members, we put it in the Consumer Protection Statute, the 325F chapter, I handled it. No, we don't have a definition, but we don't provide definitions for commonly understood words. So those terms are used elsewhere in statute, residential, contract, internet, without definition.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then the next question is the definition of residential internet service commonly understood? Does that mean that it's a commercial business operating out of a home base out of their house at this point? Because I can have a commercial contract out of my home, or could I have a residential out of my my house, right? There's a blending of the differences between residential and commercial, especially in the era of COVID here, when you have a lot of people working in a commercial capacity out of their home or vice versa. So I'm not entirely certain that it's a commonly understood definition because the areas are being blended together. The next question is, does this apply to all internet service types?
Representative Katisa Watum.
Representative Lucero, thank you, Mr. Chair. This applies to residential internet service contracts. So if you have specific types of internet that you would like to ask about, I guess we can get further information for you. But I am not certain exactly what you're inferring.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, there's different internet service types, right? We're familiar with, I hope, out in outstate, dial-up might still be the only option. We have DSL, we have cable internet. But we also have Wi-Fi in certain areas, like Minneapolis, right? The internet connection from the residential to the internet service provider is Wi-Fi. In more rural parts where there's more distance, we have WiMAX is another internet protocol, service protocol. There might be fiber, which is not copper at all. There might be cellular, which is neither Wi-Fi, WiMAX. So I'm asking, is this applying to all types? And the reason that's important is because these different types have different upfront installation costs to the internet service provider. So if we're not allowed to have a contract or are not allowed to extend beyond the date, there are minimums that might disincentivize the ISPs that are in more or least or less densely populated areas from investing in some of these technologies to even deliver that service to the home. So I'm asking, is that, I mean, I'm seeing no definitions at all. Everything's very vague. And I, understand that, that somebody made the point that it's commonly understood. Well, it isn't necessarily commonly understood.
Okay.
So the question is, does it apply to all internet types?
Well, I think the plain, I think Representative Pease answered that question, that there isn't a delineation in the bill between the different types that, that you mentioned, with the possible exception of the cellular piece, which is under a different section of law and understood as a telecommunications contract, Representative Lucero. So I think she answered your question. Did you have another question?
Do you foresee, Madam Vice Chair, a potential problem with the vagueness of the language?
Representative Katisa Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lucero. I appreciate the clarification in your last question. And as Mr. Chair mentioned, at this point in time, I don't really foresee any challenges, but I am willing to communicate with a variety of service providers and get a little bit more clarification on and tightening that. And if we need to introduce a definition as an amendment, we can move forward in that direction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I have.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Representative Rasmussen, I'm going to try Mr. Arndt again, and then we'll turn to you. Mr. Arndt, were you able to get on? So now you are muted. Try unmuting your...
You hear me now?
We can hear you. Terrific.
All right, thank you. Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman. Yes, thank you for accepting my testimony. It's a short story. I received a bill on January 7th of this year from CenturyLink for $65, which surprised me because I canceled my internet service previously on, I have an email right here, December, late December. And then I did a little bit more of a deep dive, and I found out that I canceled my bill 2 days into my billing cycle. And I submitted all this information to the Adelaide, I believe, Adeline. excuse me. So I see that I was 2 days into my latest billing cycle, but even though that was the case, I was charged it for the entire time. And the other representative that spoke earlier was exactly right when it says that right in your user agreement, it says explicitly that they do not prorate. So essentially that's my story, my case. And that's what prompted me to email my senators. I canceled my internet service because I moved from Minneapolis to Eden Prairie. That's about it.
Thank you, Mr. Arndt. Appreciate your testimony. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if the question's best suited for the Vice Chair or perhaps Ms. Pompeo, but Vice Chair Katisa Watun, I was wondering, do you know if Minnesota does this for any other type of service, if we kind of require that the contract be prorated, or this kind of be a new thing that we would be doing with this legislation?
Representative Katisa Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Rasmussen. I understand it, in some of the back and forth with one of the service providers, this the proration is commonly done in other contracts, but just not the residential home internet. And so if I'm misremembering, Ms. Bailey, you can feel free to correct me. But otherwise, Ms. Pompeo, if you have any additional information that might help Representative Rasmussen, feel free.
And I know we do regulate the terms and conditions of a number of different types of contracts. I don't know specifically about proration. And Ms. Pompeo, I don't know if you have any examples that come quickly to your mind.
Sure, and members. I think Representative Katisa Watun covered it when she said proration is a common business practice, but not in this area. So that's why this bill addresses the issue of this area.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen?
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, and my apologies if I wasn't kind of clear. I was wondering if in Minnesota law we kind of required something to be prorated, and Ms. Pompeo, feel free to jump in if there is any example of that. I'm not aware of any example where we kind of require it to be prorated. I guess my broader concern is, you know, there's a lot of services that are billed on a monthly basis, whether it's my subscription to the Star Tribune or my Netflix account. And I just, you know, I think it's pretty common business practice. And I know I've been in the unfortunate situation of wanting to cancel something and missing the billing period, but I just think this is a issue that we should leave to consumers and providers, given just how common it is across different industries and business practices. But I appreciate the discussion today, Vice Chair Katiz-Watun, and I would encourage you to continue working with the industry partners on this. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to just ask Mr. Arndt a couple of questions, if I could. Is he willing to answer a couple of questions?
Mr. Arndt, are you okay with a question too? Sure.
Yeah. Mr. Arndt, thank you for being here with us today. I guess I've never come across something where this has risen to a customer dispute with a provider that would be before the legislature to try to receive an answer to adjudicate the situation. But these are COVID times, and I guess anything's possible during COVID times. But more specifically, sir, my question to you is, how long were you a customer of CenturyLink?
Well, and Representative O'Driscoll, before I turn over to Mr. Arndt, I will note that this is not just an issue that Mr. Arndt raised. In fact, as I think I communicated to you when we spoke about this bill, I was approached in addition by a former member of the legislature who had a similar issue about the same time. So I just want to certainly let Mr. Arndt know that while we value his perspective, he isn't the only one who's raised this issue, and I think I communicated that to you before the hearing. But Mr. Arndt, I don't know if you wanted to answer the question of how long you were a customer of CenturyLink.
I moved into the Minneapolis location in 2014, and I want to say that I had service with them from that time.
Representative O'Driscoll, sounds like about 6 years.
Okay. And when you noticed you had the issue, did you reach out to the customer service branch of the organization to express your concerns or to inquire?
Mr. Arndt?
Yes, I did. I called them back and asked if they could. I don't have any evidence of that phone call, though.
You're not on trial, Mr. Arndt. You don't need
exactly, to take you at your word. I was trying to collect some information about
and Representative O'Driscoll, let's not interrogate Mr. Arndt too broadly here. If you have a
Mr. Chair, I'm not. I'm just wanting
because
to
I think the broader question here is one of public policy and not Mr. Arndt's specific experience. So I think it'd be good to talk to about the measure and less about Mr. Arndt's specific issue, because as I alluded to. He isn't the only one who experienced this, and so I just don't think that we need to interrogate him too much. So did you have a comment about the bill, Representative O'Driscoll?
Mr. Chair, if I'm going to be told what I can ask in the way of questions, what I can't, because there is actually a legitimate reason for asking these questions, but if the chair is going to not let me ask those questions, okay, I guess that's your committee. But the reason I asked the question is, if you were a customer for 2 weeks, and you canceled, the company certainly has an investment, right? That's my reason for asking how long you was a customer. The second is, if you hadn't had resolution, had you already tried to pursue some of the other state remedies that are there, talking to the Public Utilities Commission or other ombudsmans or appeal processes that we're looking at? And if that's interrogating, I'm sorry, I was just trying to collect some information, Mr. Chair, to put this into scope as to what we're looking at. So. At this time, I guess I will ask no additional questions. I don't want to have people think that I'm doing something that I'm not here today, because if I've known for one thing, it's asking fair questions.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And every time I've had internet providers or switched my internet service, I have to pay for them to come out and set up the service. So I'm not sure if there's much upfront investment from the providers, but I know it's at least like, what, $150? I'm looking at getting internet at our cabin. And, it's at least $150 to have somebody even come out and hook that wire up to my to my cabin. So it's, you know, I think it's something that the customers do pay that upfront cost. And so this just seems fair.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to help expand out of the bubble that some in the metro, like we just heard, experience. So it was only about a year and a half ago that I pulled a brand new DSL line to my lake home that previously didn't exist. And this cost to the provider was thousands of dollars. So I understand that there are some in this committee that are very sheltered and limited in what their perspective is, but there is a vast part of different experiences in other parts of Minnesota that these technology providers do have upfront costs.
And well, Representative Lucero, I don't know that you need to be judgmental of other committee members.
Stop interrupting the minority members.
So, Representative Lucero, I will interrupt members when they're not acting in accordance with the way the committee needs to operate. As I said from the first meeting, we're not going to engage in bomb throwing in this committee. I'm not going to have you talking about members living inside a bubble, particularly when Representative Cagle was just talking about her cabin in Aiken County. So we're not going to have that kind of disrespectful attitude in the committee.
Cass County.
Cass. Sorry. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Katisa Batuin, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, and if it pleases the chair, I also own property in greater Minnesota too, so in the Wadena area and Representative Franzen's district. I would renew my motion that House File 2364, thank you, be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And I would thank Mr. Arndt for his time and testifying today, sharing his experience. As you mentioned, it's certainly something that is much more common than we may think. And I think that it's imperative that we take action to protect consumers in Minnesota. We all know that the difficulties of moving are vast, and especially here moving in the pandemic situation, sometimes making sure that you are calling on the exact right date to cancel that internet service while making sure you don't have any interruptions if you're trying to work from home can be really complicated. So I appreciate everyone's attention today and the discussion, and I look forward to including this in our omnibus. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Katisa Watoon. And with that, the bill is laid over. I will now pass the gavel to Representative Katisa Watoon virtually because I have the next bill on the agenda.
All right, members. As Chair Stevenson mentioned, his bill is up next. It is Senate File 694. Chair Stevenson, would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, I would move Senate File 694 to be laid over.
Very good. To your bill.
Thank you, Vice Chair Katisa Watoon, members of the committee. This bill reauthorizes the state's reinsurance program for an additional year. As I'm sure most members are aware, the reinsurance program was passed several years ago in order to try to control the instability and rising costs in our individual health insurance market. Since the program was implemented, the market has substantially stabilized. The increases in premiums that we saw in the run-up to the adoption of reinsurance have mellowed significantly and are much more stable in those years. We've moved through the initial first 2 years of reinsurance. It was reauthorized for an additional 2 years during the last biennium. We have a federal waiver that allows us to do a total of 5 years of reinsurance. So that's one additional year on top of the four that have already been authorized, and that's what this bill would permit.
Oh, thank you. I
think that reinsurance, of course, is not without controversy, and I think we'll hear a number of diverse perspectives today about the relative merits of the program. But I think one thing is beyond dispute, that we value stability in the individual market. We value the fact that Minnesotans' health insurance costs shouldn't be allowed to skyrocket uncontrollably, and that we need some solution to ensure that all Minnesotans have affordable access to healthcare. And this committee has looked at a number of provisions related to that this year, including the Minnesota Care Buy-In, as well as now reinsurance. And I think that all options need to be really carefully considered as we address this really important issue for Minnesotans. And so with that, Madam Chair, I know there are a number of testifiers, and I'm happy to turn it over to them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that introduction. So members, first on the list, we have Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Graves, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing this legislation forward. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. As I think you all know, the chamber represents more than 6,000 employers across the state, and there are more than 500,000 employees. And we strongly support the passage of Senate File 694, and again, appreciate Chair Stevenson for bringing it forward. Health insurance is an increasingly important benefit, allowing employers to attract and retain talent in the marketplace and ensure that their employees stay healthy and productive at work. And yet, the majority of Minnesota Chamber members who offer health insurance to their employees continue to say year in, year out that improving access to affordable health care is among the top issues the legislature needs to address. And this very much reflects the reality that employers, especially small employers, are struggling with the high cost of health insurance. The individual health insurance market provides coverage for many Minnesotans who are self-employed entrepreneurs, but is also increasingly an important source of coverage for very small employers and their employees. And this is especially true now, given recent actions by the federal government permitting employers to help their employees buy their own coverage through defined contribution arrangements using HRAs, health reimbursement arrangements. To underscore this point, in a recent survey of our members, 25% who currently offer coverage their employees reported they would begin to consider this type of defined contribution approach if continually rising healthcare costs challenge their ability to maintain the coverage they provide today. Similarly, 20% of those who are not currently offering any kind of coverage to their employees indicated they're looking at these types of defined contribution arrangements to help their employees buy their own coverage. Such emerging trends provide an even more reason to maintain a healthy and stable individual health insurance market in Minnesota, and reinsurance has done just that. It's brought stability to the individual market. Rates are about 20% lower than they would otherwise be without reinsurance. And as we've heard from the Department of Commerce already this session, we know that rates would increase by as much as 25% or more in 2022 if the program isn't extended. It's also important to note that the reinsurance program, we believe, can be extended for a fifth year with little or no additional state resources. The timely action is needed on this legislation now to ensure that the benefits of reinsurance will be reflected in the 2022 plan year rates that are being developed now and will soon be filed by Minnesota's health insurance companies with the Department of Commerce. With that, Mr. Chair, I know there's a lot of testifiers. I appreciate the opportunity to add our input, and I'm happy to answer any questions as the hearing moves on. But thank you for the opportunity to weigh in.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Next, we have Lynn Blewett with the State Health Access Data Assistance Center. Ms. Blewett, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, committee. My name is Lynn Blewett. I'm a faculty member in the School of Public Health Division of Health Policy Management, and I direct the State Health Access Data Assistance Center. We work with states on health policy and leveraging data and research to inform health policy. I've been monitoring Minnesota's market for a lot of years, starting when I worked for the state of Minnesota as a health economist in the early 90s and the start of MinnesotaCare and the establishment of the Healthcare Access Fund. I provided some background PowerPoint in my testimony, which you should have in your documents. I'm going to just briefly do the key points and not go through the PowerPoint. I agree that reinsurance has been effective in bringing down health insurance premiums and stabilizing the market. I'm supportive of the program. I think the individual market is considerably volatile, and a reinsurance program does stabilize that market. The way that we finance reinsurance should be reconsidered. Right now, it's funded primarily through a pass-through amount through the federal government through a 1332 state innovation waiver. And then the state contributes its portion of the financing through the Healthcare Access Fund and some limited general fund dollars. There are about 15 states who have similar 1332 reinsurance waivers and have their own state-based reinsurance that rely on this pass-through funding. The majority of those, two-thirds of those, 12 out of the 15 states use as their primary financing mechanism an assessment on insurance premiums. This is the traditional way reinsurance is financed in the health insurance market and in other markets where insurers are ceding their risk to another insurance company. And so I would like the committee and the legislature to think about the appropriate use of the healthcare access fund, which I think was useful in getting the reinsurance up and running, but whether that's the appropriate financing mechanism for the healthcare for the reinsurance program at this point, and whether we should switch to an assessment on insurance premiums. Some additional points is that states have customized their reinsurance programs, and there's a lot of detail and differences across the states, which you can access all that detail on our website, and I provided a web link for you in the testimony. States that have reinsurance have experienced lower individual market premiums and stable insurance participation. But the premium reductions have largely gone to the unsubsidized enrollees, generally the higher income, and the impact on the take-up has been, it's not clear like how much that has generated take-up. Reinsurance reduces the premiums in the individual market, but it also impacts federal financing of Minnesota Care, and we don't have time to go through that, but the lower premiums lowered the federal financing for Minnesota Care, and Minnesota Care is projected to have some issues with their balance, and so the initial intent of the Healthcare Access Fund was to support low-income populations, and we should carefully consider the trade-offs and the appropriate use of the Healthcare Access Fund. One of the members asked about the impact of the new American Recovery Program, and I've included some preliminary information on that. I would just say that it's increasing the subsidies that are offered on MNsure. It removes the cap, so anybody above 400% of the federal poverty level can receive a subsidy. And then enrollees who have paid too much into the program do not have to, they're like left off the hook for the reconciliation process when they're filing their taxes. I just want to highlight that these provisions are only for 2 years, so it's a temporary provision. I think there's some feeling like maybe it would be extended, but right now all the provisions are just for 2 years. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify for the committee. I'm happy to come back and talk about any of these issues in more detail. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Blewett. I do see Representative Cagle's hand raised. Representative Cagle, do you have a question for one of the testifiers, or do you want to wait until the end?
I can wait until the end.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Members, we will continue taking testimony and then circle back for member questions and discussion. Next on the list, we have Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Mr. Andreessen, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Name's Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 694. Minnesota's reinsurance program has been a success in lowering premiums for Minnesotans in every corner of the state who buy insurance on their own by paying a portion of that enrollee's high-cost medical bills. As was outlined in Ms. Blewett's handout, the program covers 80% of the medical costs for individuals with accumulated healthcare expenses between $50,000 and $250,000. Health plans are responsible for covering the costs below and above these thresholds, which means plans are responsible and at risk for the full costs above $250,000. We do see situations where we have examples of members who have more than $1 million of claims in 1 year. The reinsurance program is administered by the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, who ensures the program's money is used appropriately to pay medical bills. Financial information is summarized in quarterly reports posted publicly on the association's website, and in your packets is an example of one of those reports, which was the 2020 fourth quarter report. On page 15 of that report, you will see a list of conditions for which reinsurance funds were used in 2020. Reinsurance pays medical bills for Minnesotans living with diabetes, arthritis, cancer, asthma, heart conditions, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, and more. These are all life-altering conditions which can quickly become life-threatening if left untreated. We want to ensure these Minnesotans have access to care, which is often needed for a majority of that person's life. These are conditions with high medical costs for doctors, hospitals, equipment, and pharmaceuticals. You'll also see in the report the total amount paid through December 2020 totaled around $144 million for 3,000 enrollees. If these medical bills were not being paid by the reinsurance program, these bills would need to be billed into premiums for everyone in the MedSure market. Market stability is important to insurers in the market as well. States without a reinsurance program continue to see insurers leaving their markets and insurance options decreasing. Minnesota's program has been so successful, as was mentioned, 14 other states have enacted similar reinsurance programs. And just yesterday, Congresswoman Craig introduced her bill, H.R. 1878, to create a federal reinsurance program. And that bill had its first hearing, as I mentioned, yesterday. It also includes a fix of a calculation issue referenced by the DHS fact sheet. And that fix is supported by the entire Minnesota congressional delegation. The COVID-19 pandemic has illustrated the need for health insurance to pay medical bills, and now is not the time to destabilize the market and increase premiums. And lastly, I do want to echo the statements that were made in some of the meeting materials about the rising cost of healthcare and the need to find meaningful reform. We completely agree Minnesotans should not have to decide between putting food on their tables and paying doctor and hospital bills and the cost for prescription drugs. We need to find solutions to lower these costs, which will then lower health insurance premiums. But we'll need these discussions to be with providers and drug manufacturers. The council urges your support to maximize the state's five-year waiver. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Next, Al Cruz with the Land Stewardship Project. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Sorry.
Please proceed.
My name is Al Cruz. I'm a longstanding committee member with the Healthcare Access Committee with Land Stewardship Project. I'm retired and live near Marshall. I'm on Medicare. I have lived without insurance, and I've had great insurance. One of the problems we see in the rural areas is the people in the individual market, their premiums come with a network, and our healthcare providers are being consolidated, and sometimes that network doesn't exist for them without a long trip. Reinsurance also does nothing to prevent the insurance companies from increasing copays and deductibles, and that becomes a problem for our residents and our patients because it makes the policy, while they can afford the premium, they can't afford the copays and deductibles, and they don't seek health care when they should. And by the time they do, oftentimes our local provider is stuck with a bill that they can't pay. It also has cost us $400 million in federal reimbursement. So there are a number of problems with this reinsurance program because of the high cost of copays and deductibles and the lack of network. It's a Band-Aid, it's not a total solution, and I agree with one of the previous presenters that we need to find a solution, and if that involves negotiation or whatever, I think we need to find the solution, and the solution to me is a buy-in to Minnesota Care because it solves so many of those problems. I thank you for the opportunity, and I know you have a big effort to do to resolve this issue, and I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cruz. Dan Dwight with the Minnesota Business Partnership, you are up next. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the time today. For the record, my name is Dan Dwight from the Minnesota Business Partnership. We are a membership organization of business leaders from across the state. And thank you, Representative Stevenson, for authoring this bill. I think this program has been proven very successful at stabilizing the individual market and reducing premiums by what many say up to 20%. It makes perfect sense to continue this program through the end of the 1332 waiver and look forward to future discussions on what comes next and really, really welcome those discussions. So thank you. I stand ready for questions, but we really do support this bill. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Dwight. Sarah Greenfield with Take Action Minnesota, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, can you hear me? Great, going through my phone. So just making sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Greenfield, and I am testifying on behalf of Take Action Minnesota in opposition to extending Minnesota's reinsurance program. When reinsurance was passed in 2017, it was said to be a temporary bridge to a longer-term solution, and it was promised that it would not damage the basic health plan. Take Action Minnesota supports the amendment offered today by Chair Stevenson to explore what should come next, and as well as the other amendments, I believe, though I look forward to the full discussion on those. However, we still cannot support extending reinsurance for reasons outlined in the letter in your packet or posted. I want to add some detail to two of those reasons. First, the effect on the basic health plan, MinnesotaCare. Due to reinsurance, Minnesota has already lost $350 million in federal BHP funding for plan years 18 through 20, as you can see in the DHS document that was posted. We're losing more as we speak, and the fiscal for this bill shows that this extension would cost yet more. Prior to reinsurance, federal BHP payments were more than covering the cost of care for BHP enrollees, and they've continued to do so in New York, the other state with a BHP, while ours have plummeted. Reinsurance wiped out our BHP trust fund, so we must now expend more healthcare access fund dollars, largely funded by the provider tax, to make up the loss. Second, the inefficient interaction with federal premium tax credits, or PTCs. Reinsurance does little to help Minnesotans who have access to PTCs under the ACA. If their premiums are lowered, those individuals' PTCs adjust downward to keep their portion of the premium steady for a benchmark plan, which could also increase their portion of a gold plan premium. Under the federal American Rescue Package that was just passed, there's no longer an income cap on who can qualify for PTCs, which drastically reduces the number of Minnesotans whose premium increases might be reduced by reinsurance, but does not reduce the cost to the healthcare access fund. We can do better. We ask you to oppose this Senate File 694, and if it moves forward, to insist on holding MinnesotaCare harmless, covering the costs of reinsurance through an assessment rather than a state subsidy, tying reinsurance to plan quality, and creating a planful transition to something better. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Greenfield. Finally, we have Laura Sales of the Minnesota Nurses Association. Ms. Sales, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Laura Sales, and I'm a lobbyist with the Minnesota Nurses Association. MNA is a labor union of nurses with members who live and work all over Minnesota and parts of Wisconsin, Iowa, and North Dakota. And with 22,000 members, MNA is the largest voice for professional nursing in the state of Minnesota. MNA was opposed to the Minnesota Premium Security Plan when it was first passed. In 2017, we asked the legislature to carefully consider if reinsurance was the right approach to address rising premiums and deductibles and shrinking provider networks. The reinsurance program was designed for the state to pay health companies for high-cost claims, but in return, there was no guarantee the insurance companies would offer affordable premiums, reasonable deductibles, and comprehensive provider networks. The state was proposing to spend up to $542 million to prop up a market of the relatively small percentage of Minnesotans who purchase individual coverage for themselves and their families. We support the intent to help those people, but we would have preferred to do it in a sustainable way, not this expensive government effort to get them into insurance they might not be able to afford to use. Our objections remain the same as they have been since this legislation first passed. Reinsurance is not a game changer in the broader push to control healthcare spending. Instead, it artificially reduces the cost of premiums. Once the reinsurance program goes away, there is nothing that will keep the cost of premiums from going up. While reinsurance has shifted the burden of paying some of the bills to the state government, the program has done nothing to tackle the increasing costs of hospital and physician care or prescription drugs. And maybe most importantly, it has reduced the federal assistance available to Minnesota. So for those reasons, we oppose Senate File 694 and extending the reinsurance program beyond what is already in statute. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Sales. That's all we have listed for testifiers this time. We do also have an author's amendment labeled A6. Chair Stevenson, would you move and describe your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, the A6 amendment is about what comes next. As several testifiers mentioned, reinsurance, when it was first adopted several years ago, was described as a temporary measure, as a bridge to some more permanent way to deal with the instability and rising costs in the individual market. Now that we are approaching the end of the waiver, I think it's important that we have a structured and complete conversation about what comes next. And so this amendment sets up a process that we can have that conversation during the interim, because you know, next year, I think the legislature is going to have to urgently decide what comes after reinsurance. And there's differing views, ranging from, I know my counterpart in the other body has been in his testimony on this bill has said that he thinks reinsurance should continue going forward indefinitely. And that's certainly one option. I imagine there are members of both bodies who have very different views. And so I think we should have a really complete conversation. I would note that I thought it was pretty notable that I noticed Mr. Dwight and Ms. Greenfield both talked about the need to have a conversation about what comes next. And I think anytime you have an idea that is supported by both the business partnership and take action, you should run with it. So I don't know that, and I shouldn't say I don't know if they actually support the specifics of my amendment, but I think we do need to have a conversation. So I'd ask for support for the A6.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Members, are there any discussion to the A6 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the A3 amendment is adopted. Next, Representative Elkins, you have offered the A5 amendment. Would you
That was the A6.
That was the A6. Thank you. Representative Cagle, you offered the A3 amendment. Would you like to move and describe your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the A3 amendment. And what the A3 amendment does is sets up a accountability office within the Department of Commerce to really make sure that we have that health parity between mental health and substance abuse. And so what this is would do is just give some resources to the Department of Commerce so that we're able to make sure that insurance companies are have that parity within mental health and addiction health.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Chair Stevenson, do you have any comments?
I support the A3 amendment. I support parity for mental health and substance use treatment. I think both are critical, and the need to ensure that we have good mental health coverage and good substance abuse disorder coverage could not have been made more clear by the events of the last year. Parity has been a long struggle. If Minnesotans are going to be spending this amount of money on reinsurance, I think it's fair to make sure that the product that they're paying for covers the services to which they'd be entitled. So I'd support the A3.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, any further discussion to the A3 amendment? Representative Rasmussen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for the amendment author, Representative Cagle. I agree, mental health and substance abuse is just a key topic that I hear a lot about in my community, so thank you for bringing this idea forward. I was just wondering if you could explain why you think it should be related to reinsurance. I read through the amendment and didn't really understand the connection to reinsurance and the underlying bill that we're discussing today.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Rasmussen. We're dealing with insurance. And so, we want to make sure that the products that are out there are, give Minnesotans what they need. And so, that's really just, I want to make sure that people who are purchasing these products on the open market are able to have the mental health coverage that they need, the addiction health coverage that they need, and that Commerce can really help some of these plans and products make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, because it is currently in law that there's supposed to be parity. Having it in law and then having the resources to actually enact that or enforce it, I think is the biggest thing. And so we just want to make sure that, we're helping Minnesotans get the coverage they need.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Rasmussen, any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate the explanation, Representative Cagle. I just think, something like this where we're kind of creating a new office within Commerce, and I know that there's a blank appropriation in there. I just think it you know, something like that might warrant its own kind of hearing, its own bill. But I appreciate you bringing this topic for our discussion today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Member Singh, no further discussion. All those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Great. The motion prevails and the A3 amendment is adopted. Now, Representative Elkins, you've offered the A5 amendment. Would you like to move and describe your amendment?
I will so move, and I'm going to share my screen so I can explain this one second here. Okay. So as I was thinking about this and the plan, realized that there's kind of at least a small risk of getting into a moral hazard situation with this. There isn't sufficient incentives or disincentives to it's an incentive for a plan to be somewhat lackadaisical about their obligations with this in place. So I'm going to hold on a second here. Okay, so as I was looking at the last quarter report, I noticed that if you look at the conditions that are driving most of the claims against the reinsurance pool, a lot of the stuff at the top of the list are things like diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, congestive heart failure, which I know from my past life and the health industry that these are all chronic conditions, which they're not curable, but they are manageable and you can arrest their progress. And if you you do so, that you can reduce the improve the patient's quality of life and reduce the claims. And it, in fact, the one of the last projects I worked on at Optum Health was a program where the Optum Health was hired by plans to send nurse practitioners out to patients who were members of Medicare Advantage plans. Mostly people who are coming out of the hospital because of an acute flare-up from one of these chronic conditions. And what they would do is that they would conduct a very detailed assessment of the patient's condition, develop a plan of care in consultation with the patient's primary care physician to address the condition, and then follow up with the patient, the member, to make sure that they stayed on the regimen. And the program paid for itself, and one of the more interesting aspects of it is that it was funded by Medicare Advantage health plans because it saved the money by keeping people out of the hospital, A, but B, because under the Medicare Advantage scheme, if you improve the quality of care, improve your ratings under what's called the HEDIS STARS program, you actually get reimbursed more as well. So I got to thinking, what if we used the same concept to with respect to our commercial plan? So, wait a minute here. Sorry about that. That was not intended. The presentation has. I'm going to have to start over. The presentation includes. Includes links, and I accidentally clicked on a link.
We didn't see any link, Mr. Representative Elkins.
No, it went to the document that was linked to. So, so under this Medicare incentive plan, basically, Medicare Advantage plans are rated according to the quality of care that of their members on a scale of 1 to 5. And the higher your score, the greater your reimbursement. So there's an incentive built into the scheme that incentivizes health plans to make sure that these patients with chronic conditions are getting the care that they need. So I thought, well, could we do this with commercial plans as well? And the first thing that I did was reach out to the NCQA, the organization that compiles this data, it's the National Committee for Quality Assurance, to say, is there data like this, available for our commercial plans as well? And it turns out that there is on the same exact website. So the same scheme is being used to rate our commercial plans on the same kind of a scale. So then the next thing I wondered is, okay, could I design an incentive scheme related to the reinsurance program that would incentivize our plans to do the same thing that they for the commercial plans that were that they're already doing for their Medicare Advantage plans. And you'll notice that these are the top rated plans in the commercial market in Minnesota. And it's a 5-point scale, and it's graded nationally on the curves, where the average nationwide plan only gets a score of 3.0. But most of our major plans are already getting a rating of 4, or in many several cases, a 4.5. So most of our plans are above average. They're Minnesotan. And so whereas the current plan, as previously described, kicks in when a patient has claims of $500,000, $50,000 or more, and then for the amount of the claims between $50,000 and $250,000, it pays 80% of the patient's claims within that range. So the scheme I came up with puts a sliding scale. So most of our plans are scoring 4.0. For those plans, the scheme would stay exactly the same. But if a plan did better than that, say got a 4.5, their attachment point, the point at which we would start paying claims would drop. The co-insurance rate, the percentage that we would pay would go up, and then the upper end cap would go up as well. And conversely, if we had plans that were not doing as well, their compensation would actually go down. So this is the idea embodied in this amendment, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Elkins.
Stop sharing.
Thank you. Yep.
attachment has been uploaded and is available if people want to download. And follow the links to that.
Thank you for sharing that PowerPoint with us, Representative Elkins. Members, any discussion? Chair Stevenson, do you have any comments on this amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Elkins, for that explanation of your amendment. I think, as several of the testifiers pointed out, the current reinsurance program has a certain no-strings-attached quality, and I think it's appropriate to use the power of the state's incentive to try and incentivize a better quality care, and so I support the amendment.
All right. I did see Representative O'Driscoll raise his hand. Go ahead, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know this amendment came late, and Representative Elkins did do a pretty comprehensive job. Just wondering for taking public testimony, if they do see that Mr. Andreessen from the Health Council has raised his hand. I don't know if today that we're taking public testimony on amendments, but I just thought I would point that out for the record. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Representative O'Driscoll. I will. Mr. Andreessen, please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. To the amendment, we haven't had much chance to talk to Representative Elkins about this, but appreciate his thoughtfulness and thinking of ways to incentivize good behavior. And but we think that this idea kind of needs a little bit more thought, you know, maybe part of the chair's amendment in studying what could happen in the future. You know, maybe this would be something that could be rolled into that. But do want to mention concerns about that this would start for 2022. Our folks are currently, you know, weeks away from submitting their initial pieces to the Department of Commerce when it comes to their plans for 2022. So putting this all together for that year would be an extremely heavy lift, if not impossible. But also wanted to raise that this is an idea for a plan that is, or the reinsurance program, which is only going for one more year. So definitely want to keep talking to Representative Elkins about this idea, but it probably needs a little bit more study. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Members, I'm not seeing any further discussion on this amendment. So hearing no further, can all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion prevails and the A5 amendment is adopted. Members, I also have an amendment labeled A4, and I will move the A4 amendment. Basically, this amendment, expands the existing board and adds on some additional seats. Now made up of 19 members, and just kind of make sure that there is a little bit more legislative participation and department oversight as a part of the board. So, Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Vice Chair Katizabatun. I think that this is a good idea. I think that having some more seats at the table for the variety of groups that are impacted by reinsurance, as well as involving some legislators in oversight of the program, is a good idea. So I would support the A4 amendment.
Thank you. Members, are there any other comments on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, the motion prevails and the A4 amendment is adopted. Members, I have two hands up from earlier on in the discussion. So we'll start with Representative Cagle, then Representative Haley. And if there's any further member comments, then we'll go forward after that. Representative Cagle, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if this question is for Ms. Blowett. I'm sorry if I butchered your name, or Mr. Andreessen. But we saw out of the Federal American Rescue Plan, or whatever the newest stimulus plan is called, it's hard to keep up with all the names, that there's going to be an 8.5% income cap for premiums. So I'm just kind of curious, with this being a two-year 8.5% income cap on premiums, is this something that's needed?
Ms. Blewett, looks like you are wanting to answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's different opinions on this. My feeling is that the individual market is so small. There's no pooling involved. There's, you know, it's a very unstable market, and you can get a catastrophic case that could disrupt the whole market. And so reinsurance helps to stabilize the market, helps to bring insurance premiums down a bit. For those who are there, the cap is released, and there was a typo in my chart that I included, which is the effect. But, you know, at 500% of the federal poverty level, you know, you're still almost paying the full premium. So while there is the cap was lifted, the premiums are, you know, the deductibles are high, but the premiums are still reasonably affordable at that 8.5% level. The other piece is that it's only for 2 years. So I would, you know, I'm in favor of reinsurance in this program. I just think we should rethink the financing.
Thank you for that, Mrs. Blewett. Mr. Andreessen, does look like you started your video. Would you like to go ahead?
Yeah, just briefly, Madam Chair. I think from our standpoint, we're still trying to figure out how this all works. The guidance is still coming from the feds, and it's going to take a few months before the, you know, folks in the market are actually going to be able to access some of these tax credits that have been passed. So this is still a bit of a work in progress.
Representative Cagle, any follow-up?
Yeah, so I also have a couple questions here, and I'll try and make it quick. So so if we don't use the funds from the security account for reinsurance, will those funds be returned to the general fund or the healthcare access fund?
Mayor Stevenson?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Cagle, I believe they canceled to the general fund at this point. Although perhaps they canceled to the healthcare access fund. Causing me to pause, but I'm pretty sure they canceled to the general fund at this point.
All right, Representative Cagle.
And then one last question. Do you know what the salary of the executive director of the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association is?
Chair Stevenson?
That's for Representative Stevenson or for research.
I do not.
Right. Anyone on the call who would like to field that question? Otherwise, perhaps somebody can follow up with the committee later on. All right, we'll make sure we work to get an answer to that question later on. Representative Cagle, anything else?
Not right now. Thank you.
Yep. Representative Haley, you are up next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out that the Minnesota reinsurance model has been recognized at the federal level as really a nation-leading program. And as somebody discussed earlier, Congresswoman Angie Craig introduced her bill today, I believe. And per a quote on her announcement, she says, existing state-run reinsurance programs have been effective in reducing premiums for all enrollees. So I wanted to highlight that we have bipartisan support here at the federal level as well. And I appreciate Representative Stevenson, Chair Stevenson, bringing the bill forward. And to another question, maybe from a testifier, Congresswoman Craig's proposal includes a provision that would correct the flaw in the federal law and would ensure that the savings created by the establishment of a reinsurance program flow back to the state and not the Fed. So I wanted to get that on record. Thanks, Chair Stevenson, for your proposal, and it has my full support.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't really have any questions. I just want to share some comments. I was very supportive of the concept of reinsurance back in 2017 when Minnesota was losing its individual market at a very, very fast pace. We had a single provider, ladies and gentlemen, a single provider with not the best options for people in some of our places here in the state of Minnesota. The reinsurance plan allowed for those companies in that individual market to be able to dip their toe back in the water and to offer health insurance for Minnesotans. Without the waiver from the Trump administration giving us the chance to have the experiment here in Minnesota for 5 years, we wouldn't be seeing the great work that Congress is picking up from states like Minnesota and beginning to run with it across the country to try to nationalize this. Part that I think is also rather interesting is shortly after this proposal was introduced in 2017, Senator Klobuchar said this should be the model. Senator Klobuchar may be realizing her wishes and dreams here as it comes to the reinsurance program with the complete bipartisan support that we have in our federal delegation today on this. I just don't understand why we can't have strong bipartisan support for a program like this at our state level. And Chair Stevenson, I want to compliment you. This is not an easy bill to be carrying. I fully recognize that. That is why I am number two author right behind you. I have your back on this, Mr. Chair, because it's that important to the people in the state of Minnesota. And I know there's going to be fights and battles ahead, but you are doing the right thing for Minnesota, Mr. Chair. So I wanted to publicly state that and tell you that you have my support as you continue moving forward on this, as well as the support of members of my caucus. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Chair Stevenson, any comments?
Well, certainly appreciate the kind words from Representative O'Driscoll, and maybe I'll save the rest for closing comments.
Very good. Looks like Representative Cagle, you've got your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I just needed a second to kind of think a little bit. So with this federal premium cap coming in, that's addressing the premiums, making sure that premiums are affordable for people on the individual market. And so what this feels like to me is a huge giveaway to the insurance companies. And so it makes me uncomfortable. I've made no secret of this in my past. I'm a full supporter of healthcare for all. I think that we should be moving to a single payer system. I think that healthcare is a human right and that people shouldn't have to worry about going bankrupt when they go sick. And so I just really wanted to get that out there that, it makes me a little uncomfortable. But I do want to make sure that we are, that we keep premiums affordable. And I think that with the ACA or with the federal stuff that that is coming down the pike here, that that would be very helpful to people, to the people paying the premiums. And so I'm not real comfortable giving a bunch of money to health insurance companies. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle and members for the good discussion today. I'm not seeing any other hands. So if anyone else would like to make any comments or ask any questions before we move to closing thoughts from Chair Stevenson. All right, Chair Stevenson, back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the very constructive discussion that we had in this committee. It was exactly what I had hoped would happen in scheduling this bill, because this is a topic that is of great consequence to Minnesotans, and particularly those who purchase their care on the individual market. I think that it's clear, as I said at the outset, that reinsurance had a remarkable effect on the individual market. The question is, what is the plan going forward? And I think that the bill as it exists now after the amendments is a measured approach that takes a look at what the future should be and addresses some of the concerns that people have had with reinsurance in the past. So I appreciate the good discussion. I'm sure this discussion will continue, and I thank the chair.
Chair Stevenson renews his motion that Senate File 694, as amended, be laid over. The bill is laid over, and I will return the virtual gavel to Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Vice Chair Katiza Watoon. The last item on the agenda is House File 2036 from our very own Representative Haley. Representative Haley, would you like to move your bill?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Haley moves House File 2036 to be laid over. Representative Haley, you have an author's amendment. Would you move and describe it?
Yes, I'd like to move the A1 amendment. Just a couple minor changes that were brought to my attention in my discussions with the Office of the Legislative Auditor, calling out an additional option in one of the proposals and also referencing an existing state statute, which would sort of tie the hands of Commerce in making any changes if we don't add in that page 2, line 8, allowing them not to consider that particular statute. And I can explain more of that when I get into the bill.
Terrific. So Representative Haley moves the A1 author's amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Haley, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll describe this briefly. I do have one testifier, a husband and a wife couple from Goodyear. And so I want to make sure that they have time to tell their story. I've worked on this issue since I was first elected. Rural Minnesota, and particularly southeastern Minnesota, pays the highest individual and small group insurance rates in the state, sometimes up to 20 or 40% higher than our other metro and other regions. This impacts farmers, small business owners, entrepreneurs, and early retirees who don't have access to employer-sponsored plans. This has created economic disparities for living, working, and thriving in rural Minnesota, and why I have such a great concern about us having some options and being able to address it. When the ACA was first enacted, it required states to establish rating areas based on their metropolitan statistical areas, MSAs, plus one. That gave Minnesota 9 rating areas. We have a significant rating area that runs from St. Cloud down to the Hastings area, which covers most of our major hospital and healthcare institutions and our largest population centers, as you well know. And the rest of the rating areas are more rural, surrounding the rest of our state. My bill really is a starting point for looking at how these rating areas were crafted and why we have such high disparities in our insurance rates. There are multiple reasons for these disparities, and not one solution won't handle them all. But what I have found in my discussions with Commerce and with the OLA is that we don't have enough information. And my bill is just asking for Commerce to do a study so that and bring that back to the legislature and give us the reasons and the rationale for how these rating areas are creating such wide disparities in cost and then to provide us with recommendations. And I ask in my bill that they provide the legislature with at least three different options. Again, it's been a decade of since we've had the ACA, and we haven't had an opportunity to review how we crafted those since. So I think it's time. What I would like to do is, Mr. Chair, we can take questions now. We can turn it over to my testifiers that'll kind of give you the real life example of this impact.
Thank you, Representative Haley. I don't see any members asking questions right at the moment. So let's go to the testifiers. I have Dave and Ann Buck. Welcome to the committee, and please proceed to your testimony.
Hi, Commissioner Chair Stevenson. Thank you for letting us testify. My name is Ann Buck, and my husband here is Dave. And our family are dairy farmers in southeast Minnesota. We live in Goodyear. Goodyear is between Red Wing and Zumbrota. We have six children, and we have two sons that farm with us now full time. Since Obamacare came in, our health care insurance rates have skyrocketed. For us, especially in southeast Minnesota, for us farmers, the self-employed and small businesses who have to buy individual health care plans. And now Dave is going to talk about the comparison rates in Goodyear County compared to Dakota County.
So I went on the MNCHR website and put in all the information and to find out what our health insurance would cost. And it was about $2,100 a month for the two of us, and then we had one child that still would be in our policy. That's for a policy that has a $14,400 deductible and a $17,000, $100 maximum out-of-pocket expense. So we are at risk every year for a $42,000 medical bill. The minimum we're going to pay is the $2,100 a month insurance, which, around $25,000. When I went on the MNCHR, then I just typed in a different zip code to make it appear I was in Dakota County. Our rate there would be $1,350 a month with a $13,700 deductible, leaving us with a total risk of $33,300 a year. So, and interestingly enough, through our agent, there is a Mayo option, they call it, in Dakota County. So a Dakota County person could go down to Mayo to receive services. And that price was the same as the Dakota County price. So in other words, a Dakota County resident could go to Rochester and receive treatment cheaper through less cost because their insurance costs less than what we could living nearby. It puts a situation where there could be a farmer just north of Cannon Falls that if he lived across the street, he would pay $9,000 less a year in health insurance by moving across the street. We checked into other, there's been some other, an ag co-op tried to get a health insurance group going, and they did, and it's helped, but that's $300 to $800 a month higher than the rates that were quoted on MNCHR. The other issue I see is from what I can tell is there's an income cliff on it, and I had looked at the MNCHR right, 5 years ago whenever it came out. And it had it then, too, that if a family of a husband, wife, and a child, and if your income was around $86,000, somewhere's in there, there's a cliff where if you make more than that, you get no state subsidy on your health insurance. So if you make a few thousand less than that, you'd have to pay a lot less for your insurance. If you made a little bit more, you would pay a whole lot more. So there's some things there, I think, that need to be looked into, too. You have to remember, this just doesn't apply to farmers. This is the butcher, the baker, the small businesses in our rural communities, the local bar and grill, the carpenter, the hardware store owner. There's a lot of people that get affected by this. It's it just needs to be evened out somehow, and I guess that's, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you for your time.
Ms. Buck, were you going to say
yes,
something?
Could I add a few things? Sure. So since these rates were pretty much unaffordable, we went to a Christian sharing ministry, and thankfully we didn't have any pre-existing, so all our health care was covered through them. But with this, though, we have to pay cash up front before we can be treated at any facility. So a few will take them, but not the ones that we go to. So yes, we have to pay cash up front before we are treated. And then we need to do all the claims and also the bookwork. And since this is the case, we seldom go to the doctor. Our sons, along with many that are self-employed farmers, small business owners, we have to have a spouse usually that works off the farm so that the business can help pay for the health insurance. And consequently, we feel like we are being penalized here in Southeast Minnesota for having to buy individual health care insurance. And our understanding that the Commerce approves the rates, and as it is now, we feel we are carrying the public programs with the higher costs. And I'm just asking you to look at this inequity to be evaluated. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Buck. Thank you to both of you for sharing your story with the committee. Any discussion? There's no other testifiers who signed up, so we can move to member discussion and questions. Any discussion to the bill? Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Haley for bringing this important debate today, and I also want to thank the Bucks. You know, I think just the numbers that you talked through were just astounding to me, that we would expect farmers, small business owners, people to have to pay those types of premiums and have those out-of-pocket costs. And so I appreciate you bringing your story here today. And I think it's just a really important topic for us to look at for greater Minnesota, where sometimes, given the size and scale of the insurance market, we can end up with some outlier outcomes that just need to be addressed. And so I really appreciate the thoughtful framework that Representative Haley has brought to study this issue and to hopefully address it soon. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further discussion to the bill? Well, before I turn it over to Representative Haley for closing comments, I'll just say that I also think this is a really important issue, and I'm glad that Representative Haley brought the bill forward. I'm glad that we were able to get it heard. I also appreciate the comments of the Bucks. It reminds me, when I have young children, and when they transition from childcare to elementary school, someone commented to me that this was the major wealth generating event of my life, not having to pay childcare any longer. I'm the child of two small business owners who my dad turned 65 in December, my mom turned 65 in April. And so they're experiencing another wealth generating event, which is that they no longer have to pay for private health insurance and moving on to Medicare. And the numbers that the Bucks were talking about really put that into sharp relief for me as well. So thank you again, Representative Haley, for bringing this forward, and I'll certainly turn it over to you for closing comments.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and thank you, members. I ask for your bipartisan support. I really appreciate Dave and Ann Buck coming forward and sharing their story. And as Representative Rasmussen said, it is staggering. to think of what people are paying and then yet not even accessing health care because of the cost of the deductibles. So it's time that we take a look at this. And I think this is a very bipartisan and reasonable solution. I've worked with Commerce, I've worked with OLA, I've worked with the providers, and information to the legislature is what is needed so that we would be able to make a different decision potentially and apply to CMS for a waiver. So ask for your bipartisan support today. Thank you, members. Thank you, Chair Stevenson, for allowing my bill to be heard.
Thank you, Representative Haley. And Representative Haley renews her motion to have the bill laid over. The bill is laid over. This concludes our agenda for today, and so the Commerce Committee will be adjourned until the Tuesday after Easter break. Meeting's adjourned.